My intention.
No comment. It's my way of thinking. So speak for so.
I was distracted by other people, and, but I think that, I think it does. And for a moment, I thought the unity would be more difficult, but you can just take a logarithm.
But I believe
in the first item.
Okay. Let us start the next lecture, and the speaker is Professor Sivko from Polish Academy of Sciences, and he adds an unusual twist to our program. Many people here model real networks by quantum graphs, and he decided to do the other way around.
That's the point.
Okay, so I'm looking forward.
Thank you very much for the introduction. I'm very glad to be here. I would like to thank the organizers for the invitation. I will talk about the simulation of quantum graphs by microwave networks, and this work was done together with my collaborators Szymon Bał, Oleg Hul, and Michał Ławniczak, and some theoretical help we really got from Petr Szeba, when it was necessary, of course. So, quantum graphs of connected one-dimensional wires were actually introduced 60 years ago, or maybe even 61 years ago, by Linus Pauling in order to describe organic molecules by free electron models. And quantum graphs can be considered as idealization of physical networks in the limit where the width of the wires are much smaller than they in length, assuming, of course, that the propagating waves remain in a single transversal mode. Among systems successfully modeled by quantum graphs, one can find, as you well know, almost everything. So, like quantum wires, optical waveguides, microwave waveguides, microscopic systems, and so on and so on. But it was, from my point of view, quite interesting that statistical properties of the spectra were really hardly investigated in the past, and quite recently. This was actually done by Uzi Smilański and his collaborators. Another thing was that, of course, in spite of some theoretical papers which really appeared, there was actually no experiment devoted to this area. So just really, it was really the reason I was interested in this topic. Actually, because I was always experimentalist, so the normal my situation is that I work with a bunch of chemists. So I was involved in microwave ionization of hydrogen and rubidium atoms. So it was an atomic beam which interacted with microwave field. And of course, to provide this microwave field, you needed some cables. Then I also worked with simulation of the quantum billiards using microwave cavities, also a bunch of cables. And just looking at the cables, I just read Uzi's paper about graphs and thought, oh, actually, I don't deal with cables, I just deal with microwave graphs. So that was quite interesting situation. Okay, so the plan of the talk will be the following. So I will describe microwave networks of coaxial cables as experimental realization of quantum graphs. I will talk about spectral statistics of microwave networks. Say a few words about the length of periodic orbits in the microwave graphs, then discuss statistics of Wigner's reaction matrix K, and also describe parameter-dependent correlation functions of level velocities. Of course, there will be some conclusions. This is actually the example of a microwave graph with, well, I call it with time reversal symmetry because there is no mechanism which really allows you to, oh, sorry, so with that. It consists of microwave cables, as you see. This is one microwave cable, this is another microwave cable. And microwave cables are just connected by some joints. In this case, we deal with a so-called T-joint, which have three connectors, and such a microwave graph has to be connected to some external source. For that reason, we also use the four joint just to allow it for the connection. So as you see, this is the example of quite simple microwave graph. It has actually four vertices and six bonds. So you can call it tetrahedral microwave graph. Well, such a microwave cable actually consists of two wires. It has an internal wire with some radius A, and an external wire with the radius B. So when you consider propagation of the signal inside such a cable, so below some cutoff, so-called cutoff frequency for the mode TE11, we have only single mode propagating along the Z direction, and this mode is called Lesher mode. And this mode is also called TME mode. And, well, in the cables it's quite a popular and common mode, but in the real life it's very unusual mode. So anyway, if we look at the polarization of the field, so it, electric field has only radial component here. If you want to find the propagation of a wave inside such a cable, which joins ith and jth vertex, we can, of course, do it in several ways which are available in the literature. Of course, we can use, for example, the continuity equation, which connects the time derivative of the charge on the internal cable with a spatial derivative of the current on this cable. And, of course, we have to introduce also the potential difference between the internal and external cable, wire of the cable, which can be also bound with the charge and connected with the charge and the capacitance of the cable. So just using two equations, and we can finally get so-called telegraph equation, which is, this form is just a simplified telegraph equation when we forgot about the resistance of the cables and some losses. But when you look at such a telegraph equation for such a graph, so you immediately recognize that it's actually Schrödinger equation for the graph. So that's, but we have only, we have to assume the following correspondence, then the wave function on the bond IJ is simply connected with potential difference, and the energy is just proportional to the omega squared, where omega is angular frequency of the microwave field. And then, to get microwave network equations, we can do exactly what Uzi did in his paper. So we need some continuity conditions at the vertices. So it, each vertex, we have a given potential phi I on vertex I and phi j on another vertex. And then we have to use the current conservation condition, which actually for the graph and this electric system means like, the first Kirchhoff's law. So it means that the current incoming to the vertex and ongoing, the sum of those currents has to be zero for reasonable relations. And then, of course, we have the set of the equations which can be solved. Finding this determinant and solving this determinant, we have here, we get the eigenvalues for such a graph. It's exactly the same for the quantum graph. And so we can check simply our experimental results using just normal calculations, if you want. And then, okay, so if we have such a graph, so the question is, can we use it reasonably for something? It's very simple, of course, model, but still. Of course, the first thing we can really find is, for example, to check the level spacing statistics. For that, we need to know the spectrum of such a graph. So for that reason, this graph was connected to the microwave system. So the microwave field enters to the graph, and then it reflects. And reflected power is just monitored by our setup. Well, as a result, this is the experimental run. So we see a bunch of really dips. Every time when really a microwave field enters the system, the graph is stronger absorbed by the microwave cables. And then due to this absorption, we see such dips. So they are responsible for our, the dips are really connected with our resonances. So we just really count the number or the positions of the resonances here, and this is something like equivalent to the eigenenergies of a normal quantum graph. And then what measure we can really calculate using this? Of course, we can calculate nearest neighbor spacing distribution, and even here this is integrated. And then it's also quite interesting, this is a spectral rigidity, which is defined in such a way. So this is where n means just the staircase function for the graph. Here I show the results for microwave graphs, and the experimental results are the triangles. The full line really shows the prediction of GOE theory, which is applicable for systems with time reversal symmetry. As you see, the agreement is really very good. And also we did some numerical simulation for the graphs with the same length of the bonds. As you see, again, is very good. And this, the dots really show the prediction of GUE, so the prediction for the systems where the time reversal symmetry is really broken. As you see, of course, there's no particular reason we're supposed to have, this distribution in our case. But you see the agreement is really excellent, so we can really very easily study such elementary and important from many points of view phenomena like level spacing distribution. It is very nice toy model for that. And then looking at the spectral rigidity, so we have two predictions actually. So this is GOE and GOE. And so our experimental results really go like that, and some numerics is saturated, and there are really some discrepancies between numerics and experiment. And here, of course, the problem is connected with that for level spacing distributions, this statistics is not very sensitive for missing one or two eigenvalues. However, this is a real experiment and real physical system, so the resonances have some width. So it means that from time to time they are really closely, quasi-degenerated, so you cannot distinguish them. So that's, we estimate that we lost about we lost two states just for one run of a graph, and that's the reason for the discrepancy. As you see, it's also quite interesting because this could be, well, quite sensitive measure for the completeness of your spectrum when you just really calculate this measure and check, oh, okay, so something doesn't work. And then it's a new phenomenon we can really investigate using microwave graphs. This is the situation which we can call time-broken reversal symmetry. There's such a device which is called Faraday polarizer or isolator. This is this small device, and it works in such a way that when a wave travels from one direction, it's really fully transmitted, but if it travels from opposite direction, it's completely absorbed. So this is not exactly broken time reversal symmetry, because this is associated with some anti-unitary operator and some other stuff. However, in some way, it mimics this situation. And what are consequences of that? So you can see. So when we look at the integrated nearest neighbor spacing distribution, so our experiment, this is, in this case, this black triangles, especially close to small separations between levels, are really, well, very close to GUE prediction. So it really changes. And as you see, well, you can use such a small toy model even to see such a phenomenon like time reversal symmetry breaking. Of course, one should really maybe, well, discuss what is the meaning of this breaking, but still it's something quite interesting. Okay, and then talking about periodic orbits, Uzi showed us a bunch of nice periodic orbits in microwave or quantum billiard, let's say, talking about nodal domains. We can check whether this is a good, really, analog of quantum billiard just calculating periodic orbits in the system. So we measure the eigenfrequencies, then we calculate oscillating part of a density matrix, and then make a Fourier transform of that, and as a result, we're supposed to get periodic orbits. And what we get? Well, as you see here, so this is our graph, which was really investigated. It's a simple tetrahedral graph. It has six bonds, which are really enumerated here, A, B, C, D, E, F. And the bond A is the shortest one, and then we have bond B, C, and some other lengths. And as you see, we really got the peaks at the position of the periodic orbits. And the first one is for 2A, so this is the shortest one. The second one is for 2B, then is 2C, and then we have some combinations of the periodic orbits. The width of these peaks are really connected with the number of states, eigenvalues you use for the Fourier transform. So the higher number, the narrower really peaks. So we can do it, of course, much better, but the problem was whether it was worth or not. We just really wanted to check how it really works. So as you see, it really works quite good, almost perfect. Okay, so that was statistics, and then there's something which is interesting not only for us, but also for some community from solid state. It's a so-called, well, local density state distribution. And actually, it's very difficult to measure it experimentally. However, it's this local density could be connected with so-called Wigner's reaction matrix K, and actually with imaginary part with the distribution of imaginary part of this Wigner's reaction matrix K. And well, using the graphs or some other systems, we have an opportunity, microwave systems, we can have opportunity really to measure this Wigner's reaction matrix, because it's really connected with the scattering matrix. And the situation here is even, well, the most trivial you could have, because actually we have one channel scattering matrix here, so it means that we have, well, our system connected to the microwave source, and it means that the scattering matrix, this is actually a complex number. It's just the number, but it's a complex number. It's nothing else. It's not even the matrix. It's just coefficient. So we can really measure this quite simply. And of course, this matrix S could be parameterized by the reflection coefficient and some phase. And from the measurement of S, we can really find the distribution of the K matrix. Of course, the life is not very simple. It's not always very simple. So talking about some predictions which are really devoted to Wigner's reaction matrix, people are really basically talk about the interaction with the system. So, and when you connect your microwave system to the source, of course, when the wave travels, the first really encounters the beginning of the system when it really scatters back. So you have so-called direct processes, which are really here quite important. So you have to really subtract the direct process from indirect, which are important from for Wigner's reaction matrix. So we do this in this way, that we just simply measure the contribution of the direct processes, just averaging the scattering matrix. And then we really can make such a following parameterization, which really allows us to calculate S matrix, S not matrix, which is, in this case, without direct processes. And this really matrix can be used, in fact, to calculate Wigner's reaction matrix, and then to get some information about the distribution. If it concerns the prediction, the distribution of the imaginary part of the Wigner's reaction matrix and the real part are really given by some formulas which are really calculated by Fyodorov and Savin. That they will even improve those formulas slightly now. But the most important thing is that everywhere here, we have some parameters, or alpha, or A, or so, which really depend on the absorption strength. This is this gamma. When we have in our system absorption, of course, it's quite difficult to identify the resonances, because just, well, the resonance is blurred completely, so we have to find some other way how to estimate the absorption strength. And of course, previously, when I really talked about level spacing statistics, our aim was not to have absorption or strong absorption in the graph. And now we add the absorption to the graph, just inserting some attenuators. There are some small devices which are really designed just for attenuation of the signal. So then we really force this graph to be lossy. And so we need to know what is really the absorption strength, because our really spectra are very, very broad. So for that reason, we actually measure the reflection coefficient, real reflection coefficient, and adjust this reflection coefficient to the theoretical prediction, where we simply fit this gamma. So we really change this gamma until we get the agreement between theoretical and experimental coefficient, and this way we really find gamma and use this gamma then just to show the distribution in the function of gamma. Okay, so how to measure this? We do this as always. So we simply connect our microwave graph and in this to the system, to the microwave system and vector network analyzer in this case, because what is in this case important, we have to measure not only the amplitude but also the phase of the scattered system. And then, well, we induced some losses inside the microwave graph, just adding attenuator or two attenuators or more number of attenuators. And, well, as you see, this is the modulus of scattering matrix measured for such a graph. Well, there is some residual structure of the resonances, but it's very difficult to identify them, in fact. So that was the reason we really used this trick with matching of the scattering amplitudes with the theoretical predictions. Okay, and now our experimental results. And so this local density of states, let's say this is the theoretical prediction, which was really obtained by Savin, Fyodorov, Somers on the basis of random matrix theory and supersymmetry technique. And as you see, we have the results for three different absorption strength. And, well, in the most cases, as you see, well, we have quite good agreement. Not really perfect agreement. For example, here for the smallest gamma, so this is gamma, is about 3.8. So we have some discrepancies. However, for bigger gammas, for stronger absorption in the graph, we have much, much better agreement. So as you see, well, we can really test quite important really predictions of solid state community just using such a simple system like graph. And this is the distribution of the real part of the K matrix, which actually has no physical meaning for some reason, but from the microwave point of view, it is actually connected with reactance. So that's really, the quantity which is important for physics, for solid states. However, you can measure it additionally. And as you see, we have also quite good agreement with the experimental, with the theoretical prediction. So our experiment is also very close to the predicted results. Okay. And then maybe we go to something we are actually planning to do now. So it's connected with universalities in the spectra of chaotic systems. So we simply consider the situation when a Hamiltonian depends on an external parameter x. And if the Hamiltonian depends, of course, eigenvalues of the Hamiltonian also depend on the external parameter x. And so what to do with that? Well, first, of course, this was done by Altschuler and his collaborators. They really used such a concept of generalized conductance of the system, where this is the derivative with respect to x of the energy. And using this generalized conductance, they did some scaling of the parameters. So actually, in the real life, we have this capital X parameter. It could be, for example, the length of one bond of the graph or some other stuff, or maybe magnetic field or something like that. But then we really make this parameter dimensionless and using the scaling. Oh, this is running parameters, not X2, but some running parameter X. And we also have to rescale the energies from the natural energies to rescate energies, we can do it just really dividing by the average distance of the eigen energies. So defining in this way, here this is the rescate energy, here this is rescate parameter. So Altshuler introduced two correlation functions of level velocities. So one correlation function Cx and another one, both of them have slightly different meaning because the first one simply correlates velocities along the same eigenvalue and then averages some bunch of eigenenergies. And this one allows for correlating velocities between different eigenstates. So you take this eigenenergy and shift it by the parameter of x, but shift it and you can use another velocity from another eigenvalue. So that's the distance in the eigenvalue is omega here. So we can really, this is quite, so Altshuler really claims that the distribution, the shape of such correlation functions supposed to be universal for chaotic systems, and it should be different for GOE systems and different for GUE systems. So we actually tested this prediction using microwave cavities, which simulated quantum billiards, and so the literature is quite large concerning this correlation functions, but it's always the same situation that there are some discrepancies between real systems and theoretical predictions, always. I never found perfect measurement. So we just really wanted to check what will be in this case using our graphs. And actually, so first we simply made some calculations, numerical calculations. So just again, well, following Kuzy-Smilanski, so we introduced just to make time reversal symmetry breaking. So we just introduced some magnetic potential to the equations. And so we did some numerical calculations, which really gave us spaghetti. So this is the eigenvalues of graphs, some graphs, let's say one graph, versus the length of a bond. So as you see, you see such a structure of avoided crossings, because you have really chaotic systems, so there is no crossings of the levels. And this is for the case when you have time reversal symmetry, and here for the case when you have broken time reversal symmetry. So generally, when you look even at first sight, it would be even better if it would be much better enlarged, that the distances between eigenvalues and avoided crossings for the system with broken time reversal symmetry are much bigger than for the systems without symmetry, without broken time reversal symmetry. So, and so of course we checked the distribution of the nearest neighbor level spacing distribution. So in the case of normal symmetry, time reversal symmetry, we supposed to have the Wigner distribution of this kind. And as you see, this is our numerical results. There's no particular reason to have something different, of course. And this is the situation with broken time reversal symmetry. So we have this another distribution of nearest neighbor levels, and which is consistent with GUE prediction. And this is another Wigner distribution, but S square times E to minus X square. And then we calculated correlation function for the pentagonal graph, and this is with time reversal symmetry, pentagonal graph, so it means you have just five vertices and 10 bonds connecting vertices. And unfortunately, what we really found, well, we found really some discrepancies. So again, really some discrepancies. And but the situation with graphs are quite complicated, because when you really, this is the result which is averaged over like 100 of configurations of graphs. And if you choose not properly the length of the bonds, you can have really the scattered. You have something which could be really the results of scars in the graph. So you can get some structures which are imposed here on the eigenvalues. And definitely they can really change this distribution. So one should be really very careful about this, how you really choose the length of the graph.
Which one of two graphs, dotted ones or mm-hmm. solid line? Mm-hmm.
Wait a minute. This is the prediction for GOE. And that one, the dotted small dots, this is the prediction for GUE. And our result for time, for normal graph, symmetric graph with respect to the time, big dots. So as you see, they are just in between. Not, they don't exactly follow this line which is supposed to follow. And so this is just for this pentagonal graph. Of course, it could change if we change the system. So just, of course, we'll just do this for much bigger graph also to check how everything works. For graph with broken time reversal symmetry, we have, well, at the beginning, much better agreement. As you see, it really goes quite smoothly along the predicted line. But then for higher parameter x, again, we have discrepancies. So as you see, well, we can, of course, always say that at the beginning, we have really some universal behavior. But on the long term, when you really just go, there are some really correlation which are not exactly supposed to be, so that's well, some. And so now, really, we want really to make it also experimentally. And oh, this is some other results. This is for the other correlation functions with distance omega, and for the graphs with time reversal symmetry. So especially at the beginning for small omega. So we have quite good agreement with the theoretical predictions. And then we have some discrepancies, which are maybe not really even very, very big. And for broken time reversal symmetry, we have quite a similar situation. So it means that for small distance omega, we have really very good agreement. And then it really is getting worse. Okay, so this is just numerics. Of course, it could be done better, and probably Uzi did it better already. So that's, but I'm not aware of such results anyway. So, and then how can we make it experimental? We can, for example, take our graph and replace one of the bond by another one. So we can have a set of such really wires and just replace one and another and so on.
Well, it's so hard to read. What is the typical length of these wires?
Oh, this is like, let's say, 20, 30 centimeters. But when we really change the length of the wires, it has to be small change. And at this stage of the experiment, so my student has chosen the change by 2 millimeters, and it appeared, in fact, you should see that it's just too big, so it has to be smaller to get better results. But anyways,
so you scale it in principle, make it 10 times as large. You could.
Yeah. So that's
because then the relative errors that in assigning the length would be
Yeah, definitely. The only problem is that when you really make it larger, so the separation between resonances are getting smaller. So it's bigger density of resonances. So it means you would have probably some problems with really finding, well, you could have much more really closely degenerated resonances. So from this point of view, it would be more difficult. Okay, so then we can do it. And so we measured such a spaghetti for a graph. And our first result, just for C, this correlation function C of X, and this was a tetrahedral graph. So you see that, well, it's not really excellent agreement, but it's still some close agreement with the correlation function.
These are statistical errors, then the high score is too good to be.
Yeah. And but as you see, well, the distances between the points are really just too big, and that's the reason that I don't show you this C omega X, which really requires fine steps to especially to get these peaks which are really close to the beginning. And of course, this experiment has to be improved from that point of view. It's easy to do it, but you know, this was just first try. Okay, so that's. I'm really close to the end. So actually, my conclusions are that we can. I really showed that quantum graphs with Neumann boundary conditions can be simulated experimentally by microwave graphs. But also, of course, we can change the boundary conditions. Dirichlet boundary conditions are also not the problem. But then we have the union of separated cables, so that's it's not very important for us, and not very interesting. That bidirectional microwave graphs can simulate quantum graphs with time reversal symmetry, and we can also make directional graphs using Faraday isolators, and then we have such a phenomenon which really looks like well, result of time reversal symmetry, that time reversal symmetry is broken, which is also very, very interesting. What is also interesting and important, that we can really measure the distributions of imaginary and real parts of Wigner's reaction matrix, and we can compare the distribution with the prediction of the theory, and it seems to be that the agreement is really quite good. And finally, we can also measure the correlation function of level velocity, which is another quite important characteristic of chaotic systems. And everything this we can do with those simple models. So thank you very much.
Questions?
So this time, not a question. I'm very intrigued by this because that something comes closer to reality that we are dreaming of, and it looks like you could. It's intriguing because that could be give a clue to solving the traveling salesman problem experimentally.
Yeah, that's true.
I can't explain this to you.
Well, actually,
I think this is Peter asked this question always, right? You asked the question with this idea that we have.
Okay.
In real life, the vertices are not k independent; they depend on the frequency. Did you try to measure your?
Oh, definitely, we have the full characteristics of the vertices
in
and.
What sense?
And they are really very flat if it concerns the characteristics in the frequency, and the change is small. However, of course, they change the dynamics in the graph, and it's obvious. And we can, for example, check it very simple. Even we can disconnect the cable and connect it again to the same place to check whether the structure of the scattering matrix remains the same or not. And actually, it remains with very good accuracy, but not ideally. So it's always the problem like that. So you are completely right. So that's.
Can you make the perception of the wire non-circular?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for example, rectangular.
Well, definitely, but you know, those cables are available commercially. And then when you have the rectangular waveguide, you have a different mode TE11, which is 10, which really propagates for the certain frequency. So this, the cutoff frequency for that is really given by the length of the wave along the longest distance in the waveguide. And then between this frequency and twice this frequency, you have also the single mode, which really propagates, and you can do this. Yeah, but this is, from the experimental point of view, it's much more complicated.
Interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
Now it's a question. How can you vary the length of one of the edges and see how sensitive your measuring device, your measuring device reacts to this change of length?
Oh, then you saw this kind look. So this is the result. So what we did?
Oh, that's it on ice.
Yeah.
Other questions? If not, let us thank the speaker for the interesting question.